This is the Press Pass with Chris Ryan.
This is where you hear unique conversations with the best athletes, coaches, and general managers in sports.
I think you appreciate each and every one. Each and every one is special in their own way. And
I play with two guys that they were on top of their game on a nightly basis, and people get spoiled. You know, they saw Manny, they saw David, so they start taking people for granted.
An opportunity for me. I know I need to help my team now, so you know, the better I play, the better it'll be for us.
I think it's one of the most important things is focus and consistency.
This is the Press Pass here on KXL 139, 1450 and NHTalkRadio.com. Press Pass tonight presented by the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. For more information, visit prescription-center.com. And this segment of the show brought to you by Riverbend Community Mental Health and Choices NH Addiction Recovery Services. Riverbend wants you to know the treatment works. For more information, check out riverbendcmhc.org. We have a great show planned for you as we're going to go in-depth on the New England Patriots matchup against the Cleveland Browns this week, as the Patriots look to go to 8-0 at the midway point of the season for them. The Browns come in at 2-4, but a team that is a lot better and has a lot more talent than the record indicates. We'll talk about that in just a little bit here on the program. Also, Celtics had their home opener on Friday night and came out with a big victory, a balanced scoring attack, and a game in which the Celtics came alive and the building came alive in the third and fourth quarter. And Kemba Walker, the new star, came alive as well. I talked with him a little bit post-game. That comes your way in just a little bit here on the show. Mike Souza, head coach of the UH Wildcat hockey team, joins us, and Dave D'Onofrio as well here on the Press Pass tonight. So please, you can join us here for the show. And this is one of those games that you circled on the calendar. The Cleveland Browns have long been a laughingstock of the NFL, but with a new coach and with some new talent, particularly Odell Beckham Jr., you know, it seemed like this would be a year where the Browns were on the rebound. So far, that has not come to fruition, but in order for it to come to fruition, they need a win in Foxborough on Sunday, and as a result of that, they're a desperate football team. Here's Patriots head coach Bill Belichick.
A lot of explosive players to worry about with this team. They got a lot of weapons on offense, defense, special teams. Make a lot of big plays and certainly cause a lot of problems.
Here's Patriots running back James White.
Myles Garrett, Olivia Vernon, those are two guys off the edge who are very dangerous, can change the game, create negative plays. And I mean, they're young, athletic defense and like to create turnovers and negative plays. So it's going to be a good challenge for us.
And Patriots safety, Devin McCourty.
You know, obviously Odell and Jarvis Landry are the names, but I mean, Callaway is as explosive as they come. Nick Chubb is running away from guys in the secondary, which you don't see a lot from running backs.
So let's go in depth on the defense a little bit with Landon Roberts, one of the key linebackers for this group.
When you look at Cleveland, what do you see, you know, specifically? It looks like there's a lot of talent, perhaps more talent than their record would indicate.
I see lead across the board. You know, their whole offensive line is pretty good. Quarterback. You know, great guy, great quarterback, everything. He's a great competitor. You know, they got a backfield, Chubb, man. This guy's everything you want to run it back and fast. And their receiver core is phenomenally talented, elite, however you want to. You know, I don't look at their record. You know, I'm definitely sure our team is not looking at the record because of the simple point of we know what's over there, you know, and they have a good head coach leading them, you know, Kitchens, man, he's doing a good job with that group. And, you know, a group like that, push, you can't look at the record and stuff like that. And we're tuned in, man, and them guys are definitely going to challenge us. And, you know, it's going to be a 60-minute game.
How much do you enjoy looking at the film and seeing, you know, how good that team is and the opportunity to match up with them and test yourselves and kind of try to see if you can impose your will?
At the same time, you know, it's the league. You know, each week we come out here and we try to go out there and do our best and do what's within our defense to go out there and do our jobs. You know, it's going to be a big challenge this week. You know, that's the elite offense right there too. So, you know, it's going to be very challenging, you know, and we got to be on it, man. We kind of not getting caught up in the hype about ourselves. I mean, it's good and all, but we feel to go up against offense, you know, and we got to be ready to go because Cleveland, they're well coached and they will be ready to go. And, you know, I'm pretty sure Baker and Nick and Odell and Jarvis, and if I'm missing one of the elite players, they're going to be ready to go.
I'm going to hype up your offense, your defense a little bit in that you were an elite defense last year, but what was missing was the ability to turn over the football on a consistent basis. You guys have done that this year. Has there been any reason for that, or is there any just kind of a maturation of the defense?
I just think when opportunity presents itself, we've been able to capitalize on it, and that's what you want to do. Last year they came up, and I feel like that sometimes, you know, we didn't fall on it all. We didn't all the way bring it all the way in and catch it. But this year we're making sure that, you know, we capitalize off of them and give our offense a good chance, man, and stuff like that. So, yeah.
And the impact that he has had being back here with this group, and how has that affected the linebacker core? Also, having Hightower healthy throughout the course of the year.
It's great having your whole unit.
Yeah.
You know, of course, you don't want to see no guys with injuries. And being able to get Jamie back a part of the family, it's been great, man. It's been a great feeling, and it's been a lot of fun.
Sweet. Thanks, dude.
Always good to catch up with Matthew Slater, the Pats special teams ace.
Just your overall takeaways about where this team is at as you get kind of the halfway point of the season. Has this team been better earlier than some of the teams before?
Maybe the record is in our favor, but I think there are some things that we're doing at a very high level. And you know, but I do think there's a lot of room for improvement. So, you know, I don't really like to get into the comparison game. This team is this team. This year is this year, and that's all we're focused on right now. But you know, I think you know we're doing some good things. Our record is favorable, but it's not going to get us anywhere. You know, you win 7 games in this league, it's not going to get you, you know, many places. So.
Is this kind of where you want to be with that kind of room for improvement and looking at things and saying, okay, there's a lot of things that we could do better. We've obviously mastered things from a record perspective, but we need to get better and we can get better. Do you want to have room for growth, or do you want to feel like this everything's good?
Yeah, you know, I don't think you want to feel like you've peaked,
right.
Especially in October. So I don't think we have peaked. I think there's, if you look at the tape, there's a lot of room for growth. And I think that's good as long as we take advantage of it, as long as we continue to improve. If we don't, then that room for growth means nothing. So I think our focus needs to be on getting better, and you know, hopefully we, you know, peak at the right time.
It seems like you continue to get better throughout the course of your career, and that is rare for a team, for an individual who plays special teams. Why do you think that you've continued to be able to have more success and continue to do the same things you've been able to do throughout the course of your career as you've aged?
The good Lord, I mean, you know, there's so many things that are outside of your control as a player, your health, your status with the team. So, you know, I thank the good Lord for that. And I've always just tried to work to get better. I've had great coaches and teammates support me over the years. And, you know, I've been really fortunate in that regard.
Do you look at Cleveland and say this is a good test for this team? Perhaps you haven't been as tested as much as you'd like to be early on the season. Cleveland will provide that. How do you look at them as an opponent?
I look at this as a really good football team that's going to pose a lot of problems for us in a lot of different areas. I think all three phases of the game, they're gonna provide a big challenge for us. So we know how good this football team is. We're not looking at their record. We're looking at the players that they have. We're looking at the film. This is a really good football team.
Now we're going to go in depth on kicking in the NFL with the new kicker for the New England Patriots, replacing the injured Stephen Gostkowski. Gostkowski, he is Mike Nugent.
Just what's it like been for you coming in to kick for this group? What has the experience been like as compared to what you expected it to be?
It's kind of, you know, a lot like I expected it. And the good thing is, no matter where you go, kicking is really, you know, really the same. You know, the guys you get to be around. And, you know, I played against Joe a few times and obviously just met Jake since he's a rookie. But when you have a team like this that focuses so much on getting you prepared and helping you succeed on the field, that makes it easier, a lot easier on the kicker. So it always helps when you have great protection and great snaps and holds. So when I go out for a field goal, I'm just thinking, all right, I got to do my job because I know the rest of the guys are going to do theirs. They, you know, take so much pride in it.
Kicking is one of the more unique positions in all of sports. Again, I liken it to perhaps a closer in baseball, where there's such a weight that comes along with each opportunity, and obviously kickers get remembered at times for things other than having success. How do you prepare to make sure that when those moments arrive that the weight is not something that is you're conscious of, or you use those types of moments and try to capitalize in the moment?
Yeah, I think it's really what you can do for yourself in practice. I think the coaches do a great job preparing us for, you know, what you're going to see on game day, and you know, especially the fact that make practice as close to a game as possible. Even for me, I try to wear the exact same, you know, like if I'm going to wear these socks in this game, that's what I want to wear. Just make a practice situation almost tougher than what it's going to be like in game. So you get out to the game and be like, okay, it was a lot windier at practice this week, so it was tougher kicking this week at, on the practice field. So for me, it's really picturing yourself on the field and a lot of visualization. And just making sure once you get on the field, it's like, okay, I've prepared everything for this moment. Now it's just time to execute.
That's basically what all the guys in this room will say about having success on game day, is that their preparation allows for them to be confident in that moment. And also the repetition, I assume, as well, where if it's something you've done over and over again and you're prepared for all the different variables, there's a confidence in that moment. You've done it again, over and over again, and difficult circumstances.
Yeah, and the thing is, you can't take it for granted, your experience. You have to realize, like, okay, even though I've done this just a million times over and over again, doesn't mean you can just go out and just it's automatically going to happen. You really have to focus and make sure you do your job. And I think as a kicker and even a punter and long snapper, as long as you do your job, things are going to stay quiet. You know, if you go through a season and don't get much attention and stay really quiet, that means you're doing great when it comes to specialists. So that's always my goal, just to go about my job and have it be, you know, just almost behind the scenes. Like, I want people to think, like, all right, we're getting 3 points out of this.
When fans look at it, they see, you know, if a kicker misses a kick, they say nerves or the moment was too big. But at times, can you be almost too relaxed, where you've put yourself in a mindset of, you know, whether it's mental trickery of this doesn't matter, my teammates will pick me up, or whatever the circumstance may be? Can you be too relaxed in the moment, or are you trying to relax yourself in the moment?
I don't know if you can really be too relaxed. It really depends on the guy.
Yeah.
You know, I've kicked with guys before who are just very, very laid back and just know that whatever happens, like, there's a plan for all this. And I've had people that, you know, have been very worrisome of every single ball they hit. So for me, it's just to find that medium point, like, not to where you're almost feeling tired, you're so relaxed, but, you know, just it's easy to get nice and amped up on game day, but you don't want to get too amped up, because then everything's not working, you know, in the way you want it to.
Is there kind of a fraternity of kickers where you will talk with guys on other teams and, you know, have that commonality? Because there's obviously, you know, there's special teams coaches and such, and there's guys here, the place kick, the holder and the punter and all that, and you guys are close together in a unit, but there's only a number of individuals who can understand what it's like to be you, correct?
Yeah, I mean, you talk to guys in the off season, and I would imagine other positions do it, like pick each other's brains and see, hey, what were you thinking on this kick? And I was watching this game, just certain things like that. And yeah, if you get to be fortunate enough to play as long as I have, you get to know these guys really, you know, pretty decently over the years, usually just playing against them. But I've had off seasons before where I've kicked with guys, and, you know, even if there's a kid in his second, third year, I like to just think, okay, what is he doing that maybe I'm not doing, or, you know, vice versa.
The final thing, will you do things differently, or do you try to, you know, put as much power behind it, straighten it out each time, and or do you have to compensate for wind, for conditions, and kick differently, or are you trying to just, you know, basically kick it as hard and as straight each time?
I mean, it's a lot like a golf swing. When you're swinging out of your shoes, the ball, you might hit a bomb right down the middle, but more than likely it's not going to go where you want it to. So it's really a matter of getting my form correct. You know, I'm not one of these guys who's going to bang every ball and it's going to be good from 70, you know. So, but if I hit my, you know, solid, pure, good form hit, you know, it's going to have plenty of distance for every kick that I attempt. So it's more about, for me, just getting good form and good contact on the ball. And then the rest of it kind of takes care of itself.
Interesting convo there, and getting into the mindset of a new Patriots kicker, Mike Nugent. The Press Pass tonight presented by the Prescription Center, and this segment of the show presented by Riverbend Cuny mental health. We transition now to the Boston Celtics and a impressive win at home, 112-106 over the Toronto Raptors. Of course, are the defending NBA champions, but defending without their best player and arguably the best player in the league in Kawhi Leonard, of course, signed with the Los Angeles Clippers in the offseason. This game for the Celtics is one where they didn't shoot the basketball incredibly well, to say the least. Only 38% from the field, 34% from three. They shot much better from the line, didn't get to the line as much in their first contest, but rebounded the ball really well, played good defense down the stretch of the game, and made plays down the stretch on a continuous basis. Jason Tatum, not good from the field, was good from three. He led the team with 25 points. Jaylen Brown, 25 points as well. Gordon Hayward, 15. And Kemba Walker came alive. He had struggled, you know, in his first game. He struggled in the first half of this game. Didn't really come to life. Didn't shoot the ball well from three, but made plays down the stretch. Took a couple charges, and we saw Kemba Walker start to emerge for the Celtics. But this is going to be, you know, if the Celtics are going to be a top team in the Eastern Conference and the league, this is what they're going to need. I mean, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown are going to have to be 20-point-a-game guys. Kemba Walker, you know, the same thing, or they're going to have to, you know, spread the scoring out. They didn't have Cantor in this contest. I'm not seeing exactly where the scoring is going to come off the bench from the Celtics. They're going to have to be a team that is carried by Brown, Walker, Hayward, and Tatum on a night-in, night-out basis in terms of their scoring, because there's not a lot of scoring off the bench. Grant Williams was good. We'll hear from Jason Tatum on him in a second, providing some defense. You know, Marcus Smart, he's not going to score a ton for you off the bench. So that's where the Celtics are at right now. They're going to have to be heavily reliant on Tatum, Hayward, Brown, and Walker, you know, for their scoring. This is not going to be a team where you're going to have, you know, guys that are going to step up and score 20 points a game off the bench. Let's hear right now from Celtics head coach Brad Stevens about Kemba Walker and his home debut.
You know, when the U.S. beat Turkey in that overtime game, he took two charges in overtime that were as big as any of the shots he hit. Like, he's just always been a guy that's willing to lay his body on the line to win. You could see that he was pressing early. I mean, he missed a bunch of shots that I think he'll normally hit. And then he got his little, you know, when he starts getting going downhill like that, he makes a little pull up, and then he pulled up for the three. Then he got into the body of the big a couple times and made those layups. He just looked like he had an extra gear, and he probably wasn't thinking about it going in. He was just going to be Kemba Walker. And, you know, that's one of the things. He's just going to get more used to it. We tried to stay in a couple of actions that he's really used to late, and he did a great job of just reading it and making the right play, whether it was a shot for him or somebody else.
Here's Jason Tatum, who led the Celtics, or tied for the lead of the Celtics, 25 points, along with Jaylen Brown, on the impact of Grant Williams, who played at the five spot down the stretch. Here's Tatum.
Yeah, Grant was big. He gave us a big spark with Ennis out and Tice, you know, going down. Grant's undersized, but he's very smart and super strong, and was always at the right spot at the right time. He played hard.
An opportunity to catch up with Kemba Walker, who has a really infectious personality in addition to being a all-star caliber player. And as the weeks develop here, we're going to talk a little bit about the chemistry with the Celtics now as compared to what it was last year, where it was, you could hear a pin drop at times in the Celtics locker room. And prior to last night's game, it was fun. Players were talking. They were engaged. There was like an infectious type attitude. It was very different than we had seen the previous year, and we all know what's different about the Celtics team. There's no Kyrie Irving on this team. Here's Kemba Walker postgame.
Yeah, I mean, I just can't say enough about the people around me, coaching staff, you know, most importantly, my teammates, you know, just really, you know, keeping me confident. They kept talking to me throughout the game. They knew I wanted to play well. They knew I wanted to make shots, but I was struggling, I can't say enough about it, man. They kept me confident. I really, you know, just appreciate those guys for, you know, keeping me level-headed, and keeping me confident, you know, just allowing me to be myself.
What were your takeaways from the home debut and just being here in front of the fans for the first time, the energy down the stretch in particular?
It was incredible. It was incredible. It was everything that I imagined. Best fans in the world, man. This fan base is no joke. They create the energy. that's what I love so much about them. Yeah.
Describe what it's like when you get into, you know, the zone that you're into, where you're making plays on both ends, seven straight shots. What is that like for you, and what are you, you know, sensing about what, how you continue that?
It feels good. It feels good. It's a great feeling. You know, you just kind of blank out a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just kind of like in the gym by yourself, you know, trying to get to your spots. That's what I was trying to do, you know, trying to get to my spots, get to my pull-up, and trying to make the right play. You know, if I seen space, I was trying to raise up for the shot. If not, get rid of the basketball and just trust my teammates.
Welcome to Kemba Walker there, post-game in the scrum. This is the Press Pass here on KXL, presented by the Prescription Center, and this segment of the show brought to you by Riverbend Community Mental Health. When we return, UNH men's hockey coach Mike Souza. Welcome back. This is the Press Pass here on KXL 1-9, 1450 and NHTalkRadio.com. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the program. Press Pass tonight presented by the Prescription Center, and this segment of the show brought to you by the Concord Youth Hockey Association. Get your youngster out there on the ice and skating and learning to play a great game of hockey. For information, go to ConcordYouthHockey.org. Joining us right now on the program, he is the head coach of the UNH men's hockey team, Mike Souza, as we talk at UNH Hockey. They're in Merrimack to take on the Warriors, and he joins us right now on the program. Coach, how are you?
I'm well. How are you doing, Chris?
Good. Appreciate you joining us for the program. So kind of take us through where things are at for you guys right now as you you get the season going and start to get a feel for your hockey club.
Yeah, I mean, it's been an interesting start. We played three games to date. You know, we two out at Miami, one last week down at Bentley. I think the team has played well, but you know what? We haven't played well enough to win all three games. We've done some good things, and you know, there's obviously room for improvement. And you know, as I mentioned to you, you know, before, we're still a work in progress. You know, you give up 12 shots at Bentley, and you come out with a loss, so not good enough. You know, and so I'm really excited to see us you know, respond this week. And we got a really tough game tonight down at Merrimack. 17 freshmen on the Merrimack team, so you know they got you know, they're going to be playing hard. The coach Scotty Bork was here a long time, mm-hmm. So there's a lot of kind of underlying stories tonight, and the biggest one for me is just to, you know, worrying about UNH and playing to our standards, and I'm excited to see us go out after a really good week of practice and perform well tonight.
Yeah, so tonight Merrimack, and then tomorrow night at BU. Before you get the home season going, what's it like for you guys to start with five games on the road? Obviously, the schedule is the schedule. You prefer to get those games out of the way before you get back to the WIT. What's been your thought process on that?
Yeah, I mean, we don't really put much into it. You know, we take them as they come. You know, we try to instill a one-day-at-a-time mentality here, not worrying, not get too far ahead of us. You know, for example, we haven't even addressed that we're even playing Boston University on Saturday to our group. So everything's been focused on, you know, tackling each day, and we try to segment each day to work on things we think are necessary for us to be successful that week. Let the guys compete, put the best lineup out there on Friday night, you know, and see where it leads us. But, you know, it was nice to get out to Miami. It's always nice to play an NCHC opponent. You know, it was and then going the short trip down to Bentley wasn't too bad. And then Hockey East games are, you know, they are where they are, and we have no control over when they're scheduled or what have you. So we're just excited to get in the Hockey East play tonight.
As you start a year and you start to get a couple games under your belt, you know, what do you look for in particular from, you know, your group in terms of improvement? You obviously don't want to start the season peaking, and you're not likely to start the season peaking. Is it generally a case where you find that you know, scoring is more difficult to come about early on in the season, and you know, defense and minding things in your own zone, goaltending is a little bit ahead of things, or is there not really a rhyme or reason to the way seasons generally start?
Yeah, I don't put too much emphasis into that. I mean, there's some things, obviously, in terms of expectations from a coaching staff's perspective where, you know, we know that some areas are probably going to be a lot cleaner than other areas, you know, and issues are addressed as they as they kind of unfold through the course of the year. I mean, you know, scoring was an issue for us last year. You know, we've scored 12 goals in three games, so that's a good
right.
thing. We haven't given up a ton of grade A opportunities. You know, believe it or not. So I think we've defended well, and then our power play, you know, has found some nice chemistry here early on in the year. There's a couple of things. One is to sustain the things you're doing well, and then to improve on the things you're not doing well. One of the things I didn't think we were doing well, especially last Friday against Bentley, was I thought we were a little bit too cavalier through the neutral zone with the puck. You know, we have skilled players, and we encourage those skilled players to make plays, but you know, there's a time and a place to put the puck in behind the defenseman and get onto it and get on your forecheck and protect the puck. And to be quite honest with you, you know, we turned the puck over 30-odd times against Bentley, and when you turn the puck over 30-odd times in a game, you don't deserve to win.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and the irony of it was we only gave up, you know, 12 shots. But so that was an area we addressed this week. You know, we built that into our practice. We emphasized it. We showed video. We like to use a lot of the National Hockey League clips when we show the kids video. I think that's a hey, listen, if Sidney Crosby can put the puck in, why the hell can't you? You
right.
know? So we're excited about our practices this week. Now we got to go out and perform.
Yeah, it seems like that's been a key for you guys. Really, you have played with structure, and you know, chemistry is obviously integral. You've had lines that have been together obviously prior to this season, but you know, the decision making process and figuring things out at you know, game speed, I think a lot of that is the big challenge earlier, you know, in the season. When you get into late in the Hockey East, you get into the tournament, you don't see teams make poor decisions with the puck on a consistent basis, and the neutral zone turnovers have to be, as you referenced, you know, pretty alarming. So I think early on it's just a little bit, you may play with good structure, but the decision making and the sloppiness and perhaps even the pace of the game at times is a bit of a challenge for guys, right?
Yeah, and it's a balance, right? Like, you know, you sit there saying, well, you turn the puck over, but then you defended well, so
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean. So think of how easier it would have been to defend had you not, you know, had
right.
you managed the puck better, puck management. And I think, you know, the flip side of it is we have skilled players, and we encourage our skilled players to make plays. I mean, but there's a, you know, the time and score as to when to beat a guy or and then when to put it in and get onto it. So I've liked where we're at this week. You know, I like some of the things we've seen from certain players. You know, there's other guys. You know what? There's still competition, as you mentioned. You know, nothing set in stone here in terms of lineups, and you know we tell the guys that constantly. It's just that we're always evolving as a group. Our job as the coaching staff is to get you ready, and then to put the best lineup on the ice that we think is going to help us to win the game that particular day. And so our guys have embraced that. Our leadership group has done a really good job at kind of driving that home. Within the room. And then, you know, the one thing I can say, which I'm proud of about this particular group, is a real, real high competitive level each and every day of practice. And I think, you know, we talk about all the time, if you know, that's a controllable, right? And the game has a funny way of rewarding guys that compete hard and do things the right way. And I think we've got a collective group of kids that do things the right way.
It's UNH men's hockey coach Mike Sizza joining us here on the New Hampshire Now program this hour. The show brought to you by the Prescription Center, and this segment of the show presented by the Concord Youth Hockey Association. Max Gilden has stood out early on. A couple power play tallies for you. He's a big defenseman, 6'3", just under 200 pounds. How does he fit into things for you guys, both on the power play and at even strength? And we've talked at length about the skill of your forwards. What's Gilden's role in this group?
Yeah, I mentioned the skill of the forwards, but we've got great depth, I think, this year with our D-core. And Max is he's a National Hockey League prospect. I mean, he's a third-round draft pick for a reason. You know, he came highly regarded, highly touted. And his play without the puck has gotten better each and every year. You know, he's always working at it with Jeff Giuliano, and his watching video and his attention to detail without the puck. his skill with the puck is high end. You know, I mean, at our level, I mean, he's as good as there is in the country with the puck. He's as good as there is on the power play. You know, he has the potential. You know, he's got the potential to be all league, all American type ability. Now, it's up to him to go out and put it all together, and that's the challenge for any young player. And so, you know what, Max? He drives a lot of our offense. I mean, he did last year. He has since he came here. I mean, he's if you follow the new metrics in the National Hockey League, teams are looking for guys who can break him out of the zone and play in transition. And Max checks all those boxes for us. And the one thing that I think he's where he's really shown his maturity as a player is that he's really addressing his play away from the puck, his attention to detail away from the puck, and that continues to get better. We're lucky to have him.
What is the hardest part, you think, for a skilled defenseman and in trying to figure out his role within a team and to develop that consistency? Because the forwards, obviously, as you well know, have a lot of responsibilities too. But a defenseman, particularly a really good puck-moving defenseman that has a shot and that has the ability to change the game, in my view, they have to take a lot of and make a lot of really difficult decisions at times out there on the ice.
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think guys sometimes that can skate well have a tendency to have their feet get them into trouble, and we want Max to have his feet get him out of trouble. In other words, don't skate into a problem. Don't try to. So use your teammates, trust your teammates, move the puck. You look at be efficient is what we talk about with Max. You know, you look at some of the elite defensemen in the league, in the National Hockey League, whether it's a Victor Hedman or even the guy we reference is Keith Yandle. He just plays simple. It's the Tom Brady effect we talk about all the time. I mean, sometimes these guys get sick of hearing us, me talk about the Patriots, but, why is Tom able to survive as long as he has is because he never puts himself into trouble. He knows when to get rid of the ball.
Such a good point. He manages the game. He doesn't make mistakes. He doesn't hurt himself by trying to do too much.
No, and then there's the longevity component of it. Like, he knows when to release it, who to release it to, throw it underneath, and we try to encourage our defensemen to think the same way. Like move the puck to your first option. Don't try to make the game more difficult. And that's been a challenge for Max, but I'll tell you what, he's done a really good job with it. He's getting better at it all the time. And for that matter, I think all our DAs, I think Jeff Giuliano has done a tremendous job with our defensemen, and I think it's starting to pay dividends. But it's ultimately up to the players, and we feel that we've got some talented defensemen.
Mike, as always, appreciate you joining us for the show. Good luck this weekend, and I look forward to talking again soon.
All right, Chris, thanks a lot.
All right, Mike Souza, head coach of the UNH men's hockey team, joining us here on the Press Pass on KXL, which tonight is presented by the Prescription Center, and that segment of the show brought to you by the Concord Youth Hockey Association. This is the Press Pass here on KXL. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the show. Press Pass tonight presented by the Prescription Center. And this segment of the show is brought to you by Douglas Leonard and Garvey. If you've been injured, the most important decision you're going to make is who your lawyer is going to be. I encourage you to check out Douglas Leonard and Garvey at nhlawoffice.com. Welcome to the program right now. Talk about a World Series and more. Our resident sports expert, Dave D'Onofrio from Boston.com. Dave, how are you?
Doing good, thank you.
Good. Appreciate you joining us for the show. We'll start with the World Series game number 3 in Washington tonight. And I am absolutely stunned that this series is 2-0 in favor of the Nationals. And I'm curious as to where you're at on that.
I'm shocked, I would say. And I think the only chance I gave the Nationals coming in was that Strasburg and Scherzer would outpitch Verlander and Cole. And that's definitely happened. I think I didn't see that beyond the realm of possibility, of course, but I think what shocks me is the Astros offense struggling as bad as it's done, and the Nationals being the team that's put together the big innings and being able to, capitalize when they get a crack, and it's been surprising through 2 games.
Indeed. I thought that this series was going to be one that was dominated by the Astros pitching and their offense, and that has completely been the opposite of what's taken place. Both Garrett Cole and Justin Verlander looked very human, and the Nationals' offense came to life, particularly in game two. So as this shifts to Washington, do you think that Houston has the fight in them to turn this thing around as they, you know, look towards Zach Greinke tonight to be the stopper?
Absolutely. They haven't been doing it for, you know, 10 years, but it's now 4 years where this group has proven their resilience in the postseason, proven their toughness. I mean, I guess if you just watched the Red Sox series last year and they were out in five, that you might question that. But it's a team that has come up with a lot of big hits over the last 3 or 4 years, has come up with a ton of giant moments. We saw a few of those against the Yankees. It's a group that, if you just look at it statistically, not having a great postseason, maybe outside of Altuve, but guys like Springer, Correa, Gurriel, those are guys who have a history of performing in the postseason. Verlander is almost second to none in terms of the postseason and his long history there and his success there. If they can get the ball back to him again, which would mean, I guess, game five, probably game six, if they can get to that situation, you know, I think Houston likes their chances. And I think that going down to Washington, they're not going to be overwhelmed. They're not going to be, you know, overcome by the moment. They're ready for it. They've done it before. I would expect them to play much better this weekend. And I don't know if they'll get it to 2-2, but I think they'll give themselves a chance going back to Houston.
Yeah, I think the series will go back to Houston. And you know, the Nationals will be leading the series 3-2. I think the Astros take 2 of 3 this weekend in Washington. And yeah, I mean, you look at game 6 and 7, you do feel good about you know, what the Astros can do in those two games. I'm curious as to, you know, we look at the Red Sox GM situation and your thoughts on where that is headed at this point. There's been, you know, some discussion obviously about individuals, but for the most part, it's been very, very quiet. And to me, I find that to be somewhat interesting, whether that, I don't know exactly what it indicates, because, you know, we, you know, can think about what the process was like in the past, whether it was, you know, the hiring process for Dombrowski, where it became clear that he was the guy, whether it was Alex Cora, where there was basically a lock that he was going to be the guy. But even before that, there were a lot of names that were thrown out there. And really, we haven't heard a lot of names until recently.
No, and even the name that popped up Thursday night, Bloom, the VP of baseball ops for the Rays, that name, if you even look at the way it's been reported, it's like the Red Sox have interviewed him. And that seems to be the term everyone's using. So everyone apparently has the same source on where they're getting their information. But we haven't even heard a lot about them interviewing. Think back to how crazy it was when they hired Bobby Valentine and they literally had all their managerial candidates come out and do like a mock press conference or a real press conference, in fact, after the interview. That's not the way to do business. I don't think that was a smart idea. I think you should do these things a little bit behind closed doors and not cowering to how they might look in front of the public or in front of the press. But if you believe some, part of the reason that we haven't heard many names is because nobody wants the job. And you wonder if that's where things might be at, where, yes, you do have an incredible payroll. You do have an ownership group that's come in here and won 4 championships in a relatively short period of time. You have the mystique and the history of the Red Sox at Fenway, and Boston baseball fans are second to none. But you also look at the way that Ben Cherington and Dave Dombrowski were kind of shuffled out the door, and the way Theo Epstein's tenure ended, and Larry Lucchino, and you wonder if a high level, you know, highly sought after baseball executive wants to deal with that based on what they've seen for the last 7 or 8 years. And maybe that's a contributing factor. Whatever the case is, you know, let's say the Astros don't put up a fight and the Nationals win this thing on Saturday. If you don't have a GM in place, like the day after the World Series ends, you're behind schedule in the offseason. So whatever the case might be, decisions got to come soon for John Henry and co.
That's a really good point about how the Red Sox have operated here. And you consider, you know, the mock press conferences leading up to Bobby Valentine to not having a press conference until they had sort of a press conference weeks later after letting go of Dave Dombrowski. And it kind of points to the inconsistency that exists amongst the leadership. But you point to the four World Series and you're like, well, they've been able to figure things out enough to win four times. Granted, resources are a big part of that. But in the past, they have been able to bring in top flight individuals, whether it's players or, and of course the players haven't always worked out, but they were the best players at times in the marketplace. They've been able to bring in those top flight players, and they have been able to bring in high quality managerial candidates and also high quality baseball ops candidates. And you do wonder if the way that the Red Sox have unceremoniously dumped many of the individuals who were responsible for the World Series championships, and you can do just about everybody. I can't think of a individual that has won a World Series with the Red Sox who left on good terms, from a general manager, baseball ops, president of baseball ops perspective, or a manager perspective.
And you could even trace it back to Dan Duquette if you wanted to give him right. A lot of credit for 04, which people do, and I think it is justified. He was let go during spring training. I mean, that's a really weird time to let go of your GM. And that's how this whole group started. I think the four championships speak for themselves, and so I have to think you consider this Fenway Sports Group a success. No question. But far too often along the way, I felt like they haven't had a plan, or their plan wasn't clear, or their plan was too malleable. You just look at the four championships. Each one has come after a significant reset. They've had three different managers, really four different hierarchies if you count Duquette at the beginning. And it's not a great way to do business, and if you want proof of that, just look at what the situation is now. They're going to bring in somebody. If it is the guy from the Rays, that's probably a good choice, because they're all of a sudden dealing with payroll constrictions, in large part, because they did some things really without a long-term vision or without consideration for the future and what it might mean if these things didn't work out or if guys got hurt. That's the situation they're in now, in large part, in my opinion, because too often they do things without a plan.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think that they have a plan, but it's not an overall strategic plan of this is how we operate, and a consensus in regards to that. And I know circumstances are different, and at times you do deviate from your overall plan, but I mean, they've over a long period of time, they've both handed off the reins to the GM or the president of baseball ops and the manager to do what they want and play the type of style they want, to bring in the type of players they want, to not sign long-term contracts, to sign long-term contracts. I mean, there's not been a lot of consistency from an owner perspective where they turn things over and they don't have an overall, I would say, even a business philosophy on how you go about acquiring talent and what you do in regards to keeping and maintaining talent. It seems that it changes from from group to group, and when it changes, there is a lot of variables that go along with that. There's not that consistency that you see from some owners, and they will often, it seems, make final decisions as well, and will hamper the process.
Yeah, it's really at all levels for me, because you think back to like 2010, after winning two championships and doing things a certain way, it seemed like they kind of got too smart for themselves, and they go get a guy like Mike Cameron and put him in center and move Jacoby Ellsbury to the corner because they're all of a sudden, run prevention, pitching and defense. For years, they'd slug their way, but all of a sudden, seemingly overnight, they switch philosophy. And then, Theo and Francona are out the door, and the philosophy switches. And even with Ben Cherington, at the beginning of the summer, they're talking about how he's going to be the GM for a long time, and by mid-August, he's done. It just seems too flexible. And there's something to be said for flexibility, of course. You don't want to be stuck in your ways. Baseball has changed a lot since they took over, and you know, if they had been stuck in those ways of 2002, they probably wouldn't have won anything, because you need to roll with the punches and change with the times. But it's just the sudden, like, this is what we're doing now, without a ton of forethought. It's like somebody who reads something online and then just completely changes their philosophy based on that one thing. It is that quick, sometimes it seems like.
That is Dave D'Onofrio. This is the Press Pass here on KXL, presented by the Prescription Center. And that segment of the show brought to you by Douglas Leonard and Garvey.